This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, this is going to be fun. My first guest is, I'm going to keep her on as over the regular commercial, but at a quarter to the hour, I do have a very special book that it's unusual for me, and it's called Curly Kids, and I have to interview this author because, one, I always wanted to have curly hair when I was a kid, and I fell in love with my husband because of his curly hair, and so I'm going to be talking to Lorraine Massey, but that will be at a quarter to the next hour, because right now I have a really, really fantastic guest, and I am so thrilled to welcome to Joy on Paper someone whose husband was on the program recently, Kelly Braffett. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, I hope you don't mind my mentioning your husband. I don't normally, like when I have an author on, I don't like normally mention their husband, or unless it's a writing team, you know, like Bill Pronzini and Marsha Muller. But
sure.
But in your case, because I had your husband on first, and I had some really, really nice comments about him, and he was so cute, and I so enjoyed talking to him. And his name is Owen, and so Owen was on, and it was just fun to talk to him. And the nice thing is, I always know if an interview's gone really well, if people like it. By the time I get home from the studio, there are emails, and so I had you know, or if it's gone bad, because I've had that a few times too, like a couple of times when guests have sort of gone off on things, and then I get all these emails that are not so nice. But in the case of your husband Owen, I got this cute message from a lady, and she said, you know, I looked at the picture you had of him on your website, and he is so cute. He's just as cute as he sounds on the radio. I thought, oh, that was so nice. I like that so much. And a couple others, you know, all say that he was delightful. So I hope you don't mind me mentioning that.
Not at all. I also think he is delightful, obviously.
Well,
and I agree with the woman who said he's adorable, and I am always delighted to talk about him.
Okay, good. Well, we might.
He's very talented and can reach things off my shelf. So
he's, oh, yeah.
He's a good man.
Yeah, I heard he's tall, so that's, yeah, it's great. Wow. Okay, well, it is really a thrill to have you on the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you know, one of the things that I find, I always, you know, as I'm reading books, and I sort of get a feel for the author. If I can tell, like in the case of Owen, I knew immediately I was going to like him. And with you, as I'm reading your books, one of the things I thought, this woman just loves words. She loves the power of words, and uses them so well and so cleverly. And so I thought we'd talk about, well, we could talk about both books. Your most recent one was The Unwilling. And then another book, yeah, that I really enjoyed reading was Save Yourself. So we'll talk about whatever,
right,
you want to talk about, because, you know, during this pandemic, whatever we call it, this terrible time, so many people are coming to me and they're writing to me and they're saying, well, I like how you say in the beginning of your program, you know, about dreaming about writing, and so now that I'm home, I'm trying to write, or I started to write, or I still, you know, hope to write. So I thought, well, if anyone really understands writing and the use of words, I thought, well, Kelly does. Kelly really has. There's a way that you bring to life, and now in the most recent book, The Unwilling, which is a fantasy, how you create this world and these characters that are very easy to see. And so I wanted you to talk a little bit about The Unwilling, and then about, in general, about how you come out with your choice of words and how what it means to you, this joy on paper.
It's funny that you called it joy on paper. I know that's the title of your show, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because normally people are talk about how dark my writing is. But The Unwilling is a funny one. It's funny that you mentioned The Unwilling and Save Yourself, because those are really sort of the two sides of my career, which is a strange and sort of divided one. The Unwilling is actually my first fantasy novel, and I came up with the idea when I was in college, if you believe that, which was mumble years ago, quite some time. And I had just read a fantasy novel by an author whose other book I had read and liked, and I didn't like the one that I read. And don't ask who it is, because I shall take that to my grave. I try really hard never to say anything terrible about other writers in public. So, but I read it, and I thought, well, I can do better than that. And so I was in this very sort of, all of my friends had graduated, my boyfriend had broken up with me, it all sort of, everything sort of sucked. And I sort of put together this story in my head, I think, over the course of a weekend. And through the intervening mumble years, anytime that I hadn't had something else that I was specifically working on, I went back and worked on that. So I probably have, good Lord, I think the finished book was, 600 pages? And I probably have another 600 kicking around in drafts of various terrible degrees of terribleness that I wrote, some when I was 21 and some when I was 24 and some when I was 28. And every time I would go back to it, several years had passed, and I'd read over what I had done and think, well, this is awful, and start all the way over again. And of course, at the time when I first started it, fantasy had not sort of come into the mainstream in the way that it has now. And so, nobody in my graduate program was writing fantasy or even reading fantasy. Nobody was, there was no Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings hadn't come out yet. Like, it was all everybody's, I think there were a lot of fantasy fans out there, but I think it was all our dirty little secret. And of course, things have changed a lot, which is wonderful. And now, I spent a year and a half a couple of years ago writing a book that just never grew legs, the engine never turned over. It just was kind of DOA. And was talking to my agent about that and how depressed I was about it. And she said, well, why don't you write this fantasy novel you've been telling me about for 20 years? And, you've never shown me anything. I don't think you've ever finished a draft. Sit down and make that what you're working on. And if nothing else, you'll get it out of your system, but maybe we can sell it and do something with it, and it could be great. And so I wrote it, and we sold it, and I'm currently working on the sequel. It is about it does not have a quick and easy elevator pitch, unfortunately, so this is always the part where I sort of stumble and go, but it's about a kingdom where the heir is raised with a foster sister, and the two of them share all of their sensations. If one of them is hurt, if one of them stubs their toe, the other one's toe bruises. If one of them gets cut or injured or sick, the other one shows the sign of the injury. So, of course, as they get older, the question becomes what to do with this woman who is basically renders the heir of the kingdom incredibly vulnerable. And so one of my friends, Anthony Bresnikan, told me that he thought it was an adventure story about empathy, which I really like. And after Owen read the first draft of it, he said, it's sort of funny. You kind of wrote a book about a world with no cell phones. I think all of the problems that these people have can be solved by being able to easily communicate with each other over large distances. So that is The Unwilling. As for the word thing, I mean, it's funny because I am currently, I think that's like the fourth time I've said it's funny. I'm sorry, that's my verbal tic. But I am currently working on the sequel to The Unwilling, which I wrote in faster than I've ever written anything before in my life, because for the first time I had a deadline and I had somebody waiting for it. And so I wrote the first draft, and now I'm going back through. And so I'm thinking a lot about word choice. You know, the first draft is just this like frenzied push toward the end, getting all of the sort of events in more or less the right order, and getting, you know, just a very, very rough outline of the arc of everybody's story. And then the second draft is when you sort of start to go through and think, what does this person want, and what is the best way to describe it? And it's hard. I mean, it's hard, but it's also immensely satisfying. It feels like, oh gosh, which writing metaphor shall I pull up today? It feels like when you're organizing furniture in a room, you know, when you keep moving it around and looking at it and thinking, no, that still feels wrong. And then you finally get the couch in the right place and the end table's in the right place. And then you look at it and go, ah, yeah, that's it. That's the room I want to be in. And that's sort of what it feels like revising. Like, I just keep sort of moving the words around until I get to the best possible description of what I'm trying to do. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah,
like,
and okay. it is true. You know, it's so one of the miracles, really, when you're writing, is that sometimes words come into your head that you haven't used before in any, you know, like normal conversation, or you haven't written them down before, but somehow they just fit into the story. I as I'm reading your work, I kept getting this feeling like, well, obviously, you know, you're well read and you know a lot of words, and of course you studied writing, but how it just sort of comes in very smoothly. All of this. Sometimes I would just stop and I'd say, "Whoa, that was nice. That was nice." I sort of got this. Yeah, this is great writing. I think my greatest compliment to an author is always if I say it's solid. That it's just so good that it just flows. And so when I was reading yours, since I have to, you know, interview people about their writing, I sort of make these little notes, and if a phrase hits me that I really like, or that, you know, I think is just perfect. And it's like in the beginning of the book where you say where you're talking about she's the best worker in a group, and you describe with hair going to grizzle and gimlet eyes, and I read that phrase and I said, oh, I said to myself, did she just type it? Did it just flow out of her like that? Or, you know, I love things like that.
Well, thank you. That is nice. I hadn't forgotten that I wrote that. Yay me. It's funny. I think that a lot of that, I try really hard to make everything serve the story. You know, the story is really what is the most important to me, because, you know, I got my MFA a couple of decades ago, and I spent a lot of time in that MFA class reading people's work that was beautifully written, but just kind of forgot about the story part. And the story's always been super important to me. Like the books that I sort of cut my writer teeth on, like when I was an actual adult and looking at books in terms of writing, were was actually for the most part old crime fiction. You know, Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett and John D. MacDonald and people like that. That's all about the story, but also with this very clear, elegant, like incisive writing that's not at all overdone, but also just graceful and easy, you know? Like, sometimes I read books and think, why are they making me work so hard? Which sounds awful. And that's not, it's not about laziness. It's just about clarity and about wanting to make sure that the reader wanting to show the reader what I see in my little brain in the clearest way possible and in the most immersive way possible. You know, I am always glad to hear when a phrase strikes somebody as beautiful, because obviously we all like compliments and that makes me feel very good about myself. But it's more for me about like creating a very, you know, three-dimensional world and making sure that vibe sort of comes through and comes across. And it's funny you mentioned the word grizzled, because that word was very much in my brain when I was writing that book, because I had this 20-year-old cat, this 20-year-old black cat who was grizzled. Like at one point I posted a picture of her on Instagram and one of my writer friends said this cat should be in the dictionary under the word grizzled. And so every time I looked at her, I think, I love you, but you are grizzled. So that's the way my mind works about words, I'm afraid.
And the way it's, you wrote it with hair going to grizzle and gimlet eyes. It just, I guess the two G words just, it made a great sentence. I liked it. Now, but we can't mention Raymond Chandler and gimlet in the same paragraph, because then I start to think of a different kind of gimlet. And so now it's funny. As a matter of fact, when I read the story later on, I don't know, a couple days later, and because again, I had made notes, you know, I make the little notes, although I don't always have to, because I have this wonderful ability to sometimes see an entire page of a book that I've read sometimes 30 years ago, and I can see it. But
that's wonderful.
But I did have the notes, and I did have the notes, and I had gimlet, and I thought, oh, I haven't had a gimlet for a long time. Yeah. And of course, that always reminds me of New York City, that, you know, if you're in the plaza, you have a gimlet. And I thought, oh. So your mom.
Gimlets were one of my drinks of choice, actually.
Yeah, you do? Oh, there's nothing.
Well, back in the day.
Back
in the day, yeah.
Back in the day when we could sit around and drink in bars. And I don't even know if the plaza has a bar. They have a bar? Yeah. Maybe the Algonquin would have it. Because it is actually one of my favorite. I think it's my favorite drink, because I really like it, and you never see people ordering it, but you know, it might come back. Now we're talking about it. Yeah, you never know.
Maybe we can bring it back.
That's right. Everybody is going to go out now, and they're going to go to, when they can go back to bars. They'll say, oh, Patsy with a Z was talking about gimlets. I want a gimlet. Actually, we probably could all use one right now, because
use one.
Or two, yeah. Or three, because it's crazy. But it, for a writer, you know, being stuck in the house isn't all that bad.
Well, it's a little tricky because we do have a child, and that child is old enough to disappear off into her bedroom with an iPad. But, you know, there's also, which is in a way is convenient. Like I really feel for my friends right now, particularly my writer friends who are used from working from home, but everybody who have like 4 or 5 year olds, like that's gotta be agony.
Oh no, no, that's for me, that's joy. That's real joy. I homeschooled my kids. So I had them 24/7 for 18 years.
That's extremely impressive. And I'm in awe of you. I don't mean agony in the sense that being around your kid is agony, obviously.
Oh, no.
But if you know, I have a friend who has a deadline and a kindergartner at the same time. Uh-huh. Like that juggling act is really hard. Because the juggling act that we're doing right now is really difficult, because, you know, while my child can happily spend all day playing Sims, we don't actually want our child to spend all day playing Sims. You know what I mean? So there is this like sort of push and pull between, well, I have to work, and so you need to entertain yourself, but later you need to come and speak to humans.
Well, you know, I solved that problem really easily because it was before the time of iPads. And I hid clues and treasure all over the house. And I'd give them a map and say, find it. They'd be gone for hours, hours.
That's brilliant. And they're
so happy about it. And that's it. And I'd say it's a magical adventure tour. And you're going to find all these things and come back to me in 2 hours. I'll have lunch. So
right, exactly. You'll need to have this magical adventure until at least 11:30.
Well, as a child, my summer was that. I mean, essentially, that sound of the screen door. There's nothing like the sound of a screen door. And I remember in the summer. My mother would make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and we'd have a mason jar. We didn't have vacuum bottles. We weren't rich enough. We had a mason jar of Kool-Aid, and we'd go out that kitchen door, the screen door would close, and we wouldn't come back until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And we were so happy. So, yeah, you know.
I grew up in the young part of my childhood was spent in rural Arizona, and I was just telling Owen yesterday about how we used to get on our bikes in the morning, and you know, you could see who was at whose house on the street based on which dogs and which bikes were in the yard, and we'd be gone all day. Yeah. And you'd have lunch at somebody's house, you know, somebody would always be willing to throw you a PB&J.
Oh yeah.
But we biked for miles and miles and miles, and that's just sort of not the world that our kid is growing.
No, it's a shame. And not the world that your characters are growing up in.
Because
you have really created, one of the things is that you have created a real fantasy world, a very complicated one. I was going to ask you, do you use... Do you work in Word or Scrivener?
You know, I work in Word. I tried Scrivener for a while, and it just felt like there were a few too many, like, moving parts for me. But, you know, this was after. I have friends who swear by Scrivener and who have told me, if you just keep using it, you'll get used to it. But I've been working in Word for 20 years. Like, I know where the comments are. I've got my thing down. Like, I can make it work. So, yeah.
Yeah, because you have a lot of complicated locations, characters, and it's, you know, to really keep track of.
Yeah, it's funny. The one part of Scrivener that I did keep was sort of the organizational aspects, like not the drafting, but like lists of characters and things like that. At one point, I had them all going in Scrivener. You know, and also, though, keep in mind that I spent 20 years thinking about this book on long train rides and waiting for airplanes. And so when I actually sat down to write it, I had sort of looked at it inside out and backward. And I had it pretty well ordered in my head, which is weird. I wish I had 20 years to think about every book.
Now, of course, this is an adult fantasy.
I think so.
Very. And it's not... you made that decision to make an adult fantasy as opposed to YA, because there's a lot of YA fantasy, great YA fantasy too, but
sure.
So you made that decision to make it an adult fantasy?
Well, I didn't make the decision when I was writing it. I just sort of wrote it, and then we all had to figure out what to do with it. And we decided to cross-promote it to YA people, just because there is such a solid fantasy community in YA. But I never felt like it was particularly a YA book. And in point of fact, I think a lot of the YA people that we cross-promoted it to said, this is not a YA book. It was not. It did find some readers that way, but it was not a perfect fit for that section, which is sort of, I don't know that I've ever written a book that fit perfectly into any of the genres that they theoretically belong to. You know, I write mysteries with no mystery, and I write crime novels where, you know, the crime happened 3 years before, and now I'm writing this fantasy novel where, you know, there's magic, but there's no elves and no dragons and no wizard school. So it's always sort of a, you know, you just throw it at the wall and hope to hit somebody who likes it in the marketing sense.
And well, you know, you do write, it's really a sort of a wide variety of subjects, because when I was looking at your work, I thought, well, there's a lot of this darkness. There is darkness, and you know, and it's something that I think do you even have that on one of your things? There's something about you write dark books or something. I don't know.
My tagline for The Unwilling, like, I've always sort of jokingly said, I write, you know, when I meet people at barbecues or something, and they say, so what kind of books do you write? I say, I write books about unhappy people making bad decisions.
Ah, that's it. Unhappy people. I knew dark or unhappy something. Oh, God.
Yeah, so my tagline for The Unwilling is unhappy people making bad decisions, but this time with magic.
Oh, well, okay, that makes it a little bit better. and Save Yourself was also a very deep book. A lot of memorable things in that book, though. Again, your use of words, your use of language, there's a point where a writer gets to their craft, and it makes it for the reader, it makes it more pleasant, because you're really just, you get into the story, and that certainly happened, I think, you know, in that book.
Well, most of my previous books took place at least partially in Western Pennsylvania, which is where I went to high school. We moved from Arizona to Pennsylvania. And it's after I wrote Save Yourself, and Owen read it, because he's always my first reader, because he lives with me. He's very convenient.
Yeah.
And he's also a very incisive reader and a really good editor. He said, you know, I feel like this is the culmination of your Western Pennsylvania books. Like, I think this book says everything you have been trying to say in the other two books, and I don't know if you have anything left to say about Western Pennsylvania. And he didn't mean it in a negative way. I didn't take it in a negative way. I think he was right. Like, I think that all of my feelings about that place and the people that I knew there and all of the love and sort of conflicted, you know, frustration that I have for that area and those people were sort of all in Save Yourself. And those characters they still live in my head. They might show up again. I tried to write another book about one of the characters in that book, and when I sat down to write it ended up being, you know, a short story instead, so I have to wait for another idea to show up. But those people were pretty important to me.
Well, it's always exciting for me to talk to an author whose, you know, work and I admire, and I now, who knows, during this crazy time it's very difficult to promote books. I'm sure that you had planned on, you know, a lot of things, doing things. I mean, we actually used to do things, go places.
We did.
You know, and meet people.
Yeah.
And so all of that is off. But
yeah,
it's a weird, weird time. So hopefully when the next book comes out, you'll be able to get back out there and do some networking with your fan base and with just a book signing with real people would be nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
it would be. I mean, fortunately the book came out in early February, so I did have a good 6 weeks or so to sort of go around and do stuff and talk to people. The publishers actually decided to push the paperback back by about 6 months, so going to come out in April, I think, and then the sequel will come out in November. So hopefully by then we will be able to, not this November, next November, November 2021.
Yeah, I know.
So hopefully by then we can do things.
Okay. Well, I as I said, it's just really a joy for me to talk to you. And again, I'm, you know, the name of the book, and people can check it out. I'm telling, you know, because I have a lot of listeners, I do have a lot of listeners who, let's say, prefer cozy mysteries. They're of the age.
Mm-hmm.
They're cozy mystery people. This is not a cozy mystery. So Don't get Kelly's book if you think it's going to be a cozy mystery. It's not. The Unwilling is her latest book, but I also recommend Save Yourself. And they're available where Barnes and Noble and Amazon. I think that's the only place. Nobody's going. My local bookstore's closed down. I don't know if she'll be back in business. She got tired of telling people to wear their mask and, you know, just wiping things down and cleaning things. She's gone on vacation. She's gone to Georgia. She said,
our local bookstores have begun shopping. So if people are doing online shopping, if you have a local bookstore, they might be willing to ship it to you, leave it outside their door so you can come pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. But, and again, I have to mention Owen, because, you know, I fell in love with him when I read his book. I'm going to mention it, too, so people can get Owen King's book, double feature. Because when I was reading it, and his main character is a guy named Sam Dolan, and there's something about Sam that I really liked. because I had been in sort of indie film business, and I knew a lot about that, and the book covers a lot of film, just sort of a film buff kind of thing that makes the book very enjoyable. And so that's another book. I'm not even going to mention. I'm not going to mention the other one in your life because he sells enough books.
He's fine.
He's fine. I think so. But again, really, it's a real pleasure to talk to you. And the name is Kelly Braffett. You have a website you want people to go to, Facebook. What do you like to find people or people to find you?
Well, right now I'm deeply immersed in the book, so I'm kind of off the social medias because I have to write. But I'm on Twitter pretty regularly, and my website is kellybraffett.com. So people can always go there and see if I've done anything. We got a little social media thing there that shows everything I've done recently. But thank you so much for having me, Tessie. This was a lot of fun.
Well, it's been a thrill for me, and say hi to Owen for me. I think
Will
you
do.
Are both very talented, and I do. Have you ever seen that movie or read the book Enchanted April?
I have, actually.
Okay.
It seems like I should, but I don't think
you
I have.
You should. I want you to go and watch that movie, Enchanted April, and then I'll send you an email why you have to, you really, really, really have to see that film, and because something in that film reminds me of you, and I want... And so I wanted to write Owen about it, and I'll write you about it, but I think you should see Enchanted April. And then
I will look into it.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Take care now and be safe out there. Okay.
Thanks. You too.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Kelly Braffett. Okay. Now we're going to go to, we're going to have a book buzz, a very special one from Rita Moreau. Okay. Let's go for it.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz, Buzzkiller by author Tom Straw. The author of 7 New York Times bestsellers, writing as Richard Castle, and his first mystery since the blockbuster Nikki Heat series. Here's the buzz. New York City public defender Macy Wilde takes the homicide case of a burglar the tabloids nicknamed the Buzzkiller for his M.O. of lobby-buzzing apartments to select his targets. But when he is the victim of an attempted jailhouse killing, and then someone tries to kill Macy, her murder case reveals itself to be something bigger. Stonewalled by a hostile DA and shut down by a code of silence from the Buzzkiller's criminal circle, she crosses paths with Gunner Cody, an ex-detective dismissed from the NYPD's elite unit. The brash former police spy is now a freelance video journalist trampling all over Macy's case, shooting a documentary. In spite of her misgivings about his methods, Macy and Gunner form an uneasy partnership fraught with moral conflicts and romantic sparks. In constant danger from a ruthless contract killer, they collide with an unscrupulous pharmaceutical CEO, a playboy prince, rogue FBI agents, a high-tech cat burglar, a sadistic call girl, plus a scheme to launder illegal Russian billions through Manhattan luxury real estate. In an emotional climax, they expose a deadly conspiracy that reaches the highest halls of power. Buzzkiller is Tom Straw's first book under his own name. The ending culminates in a shocking twist that's anything but a buzzkiller. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper. I am just waiting to talk to somebody whose book I'm holding in my hand. I'm holding it also up to the YouTube camera. And it is a wonderful book. I love this book. Curly Kids, The Handbook. Well, I'm just waiting for her to come on and then we will talk about her. And meanwhile, I want you to... Oh, look at me. I'm looking at all the beautiful pictures. Absolutely wonderful photos in this book, and this is interesting. I'm gonna have fun talking to her because I didn't know all this, but I do know all about curly-headed kids and my husband. Hi, I'm so happy to welcome Lorraine Massey to Curly Kids of Curly Kids. Hi, Lorraine, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. Are you a curly girl?
I have straight hair. And as a child, all I wanted was curly hair. And I wanted to look like Shirley Temple. And I so wanted curly hair. It was so funny. I was surprised when I read this book because I had no idea that curly hair wasn't the perfect hair, because first of all, I fell in love with my husband because of his curly hair.
If he
hadn't had curly hair, I wouldn't have fallen in love with him, I don't think, because I was in my office. He walked into my office from outside, and it had been, there was icy rain, and the little icicles were in his hair, and he had this big bushy curly hair, and it looked like a halo with all his golden sparkles. And I fell in love with him instantly. I mean, in an instant, I knew I was, and I could already see, I had a flash in my, in my head that we were going to get married. And it was because his hair, as he stood under the fluorescent light, and his hair was just so gorgeous. And that was it. And
that is the most beautiful story. Really, thank you for sharing that, because I'm just a visual. It's almost like a little angel came into the room and it's just like...
Well, a big, gorgeous angel.
How long did you get married?
Huh?
Like after that, how long after did you get married?
About 2 weeks. I would have married him that day, actually. But, you know, it took a little time.
Beautiful.
And then, of course, our boys had curly hair. So curly hair is, to me, the perfection. And I was so shocked when I read your book that it isn't. I mean, it wasn't. Or you didn't consider it as perfect.
Well, not only me, but, you know, a majority of our environment, you know, somehow it's just a very misunderstood hair type. And a lot of the product industries and the, you know, the hair industry, we're the most vulnerable. So I think we're, you know, they're always like, oh, you don't like what you have, do you? Let us help you. We can fix it. But it doesn't need fixing. It just needs to be understood.
Well, I mean, I always thought it was a blessing. It was like, it was a blessing to have curly hair. And so that, it never even occurred to me in all the years with my boys who had this massive amount of curly hair, and my husband, until later on in his elder years, let's just say he lost it. But I think it's the most beautiful. I love curly hair. And I never knew anybody made fun of people with curly hair. Now, when I lived in England, people did make fun of ginger hair, which I think is a terrible thing.
Yes, it is. My son has ginger hair. He's in the book, actually, Dylan. But yeah, he had a lot of people make fun of him, but now they love it. The thing is, though, with you, you're so positive that I think your boys just had you as this positive mirror image. And they never once thought that anything was, you know, wrong, which is beautiful. I mean, did they keep their hair long or did they cut their hair short, your boys?
Well, they kept it long for right up until they were quite old and curly, because they'd seen their dad with curly hair. And I love it. And they look gorgeous. I can't imagine anybody crying. I mean, you actually cried because you had curly hair?
Well, I think a lot of it is because the way it was treated. So my mom saw this head of hair that she had no idea what to do with. So everything she did was brush it, shampoo it, made it worse. So no matter what she did to try to subdue it or put it in like a straight comb or something, it actually did the opposite. You know, so the worse that you treat it, the worse it becomes. So I think whatever you were doing, how come you didn't share what your knowledge
Well, it was just such a joy to take care of it. I mean, it was just such a joy to see it all curly. As a matter of fact, one time I did actually, I deliberately got a permanent with the tightest curls because I wanted to have curly hair, but it didn't last. And, you know, when you're naturally straight haired, it's really hard to keep it curly. And so that's why I can't imagine. I must live in some kind of bubble because I can't imagine anyone making fun of anyone for straight hair or curly hair. But why curly hair when it's so beautiful? It's like God's gift to humanity to see somebody with beautiful curly hair.
I need to interview you. You have to be in my next Curly Girl the Handbook, the update. I need to interview you. That story about your husband just warmed my heart. And then your boys. So there's not enough positive stories like yours that we hear. And because now, I do believe it's because we're mixed now. We're pollinated. A lot of our marriages are all mixed. So we have all these beautiful curls popping up, you know, all over the place, all different types of tight curls, fractal curls, loose curls, Botticelli curls, spiral curls. So now we're, I think we just pollinated, and now they're coming up, and you know, they're stronger than ever, because I feel like if it is true about global warming and we have water levels rising, our curls cannot stay straight anymore with all the blowouts. They still
Why would you want them to be straight? It's so ridiculous. It's like a glory. It's to see curly hair is a glory. It's wonderful.
I agree with you 100%. Now I do. And I just wish that you were my mom.
Well, so quickly, we don't have a lot of time. Tell people how they should take care of curly hair, in addition to just going around telling people, oh, you're so lucky to have curly hair. How should people take care of it? What's special about
Okay. Well, the first thing is curly hair is naturally dry. We have naturally dry hair. So what we've been doing from birth is washing the hair with detergent shampoo. So all those bubbles dry out curly hair. So curls need hydration. So to shampoo curly hair is like saying, I'm thirsty, but I'm going to drink hot water. So basically, if you start to find yourself a nice sulfate-free cleanser that has no bubbles whatsoever, you will almost immediately see your curls become frizz-free, bouncy, and defined. So one of the biggest things for curly hair is shampoo. Shampoo tends to dry us out even more than we already are. And that's one of the main things. If you can keep it hydrated, you will be happy for life.
And people should just, I don't know, I think it's like when they talk about a crowning glory, they're talking about curly hair. I mean, this is...
They are. If you are right, because if you look at all the period pieces, if you look through history, when you go to the museums, when we go back to the museums, you're going to see that you don't see a blowout in any period piece. Everyone has undulating, Botticelli, pre-Raphaelite, and golden curls like your husband.
it's heartbreaking for me to think that anyone... Yeah. Wouldn't want curly hair or that any, I can't imagine it. At one point you talk about, some of the mean things people said, I just like, what's wrong with humanity? Yep. Because it's really ridiculous. And I'm telling everybody out there, curly hair people are the lucky people.
And you know what's so interesting is that the fact that I even had to write a book about it is sad in itself.
Yeah, it is.
Because curly hair has been around since the beginning of time. And I'm a hairdresser. I'm trained. I was trained to straighten everyone out. I was never trained to, if somebody came in with curly hair, oh, you have beautiful curls. We were trained to say, oh, we assume that you don't like them.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my dear.
I know.
Oh, that's terrible. And the book is beautifully illustrated. As you said, your son is in it and lots of beautiful.
And my daughter is in it.
Yes. And your daughter. And it's just so gorgeous. And the pictures are wonderful. There's a lot of explanation how to take care of curly hair and all sorts of things. Oh, my goodness. And the pre-cleanse conditioning and the, all of that. It's all in the book. Beautiful. Yeah. Really
and
beautifully illustrated.
Recipes. Yes, thank you. And if you need to, I do answer all my DMs on Curly World LLC on Instagram. So if anybody has any questions for me, I will always answer them. It might not be straight away, but I will be happy to answer any of your individualized questions.
And curly hair is as beautiful when you're a child and when you get older. I love curly hair.
Yes.
Mature curly hair. Now, unfortunately, my husband, at one point, when he started to lose his hair, he actually shaved it all off, and I didn't talk to him for a week. So,
we'd love to interview you.
Those are the photos I keep around. My favorite ones are all with his curly hair. So I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. The book is available online or where books are sold. It's called Curly Kids, The Handbook, How to Care for Your Child's Glorious Hair. And that is the word. And Lorraine, I want to thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you.
And I will send you some photos of my boys too. Okay.
Yes. Please, I can't wait. I cannot wait to see them.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. Wonderful book. Curly Kids, The Handbook. Get it for every curly kid in the world. Okay. All right. Oh, wow. This is crazy. I don't know. Maybe I did live in a bubble because I actually wasn't bullied by anybody. Nobody bullied me when I was a kid except my third grade teacher. She was a bully. She was a terrible bully. But none of the kids bullied me. Of course, I didn't have curly hair. But if they had, if any, if I, If anyone had bullied me because I had curly hair, which I really wanted because I wanted to look like Shirley Temple, I'd have punched him in the nose. You know, it was, I was like that. I was a, I don't know. Please, people, get over it. Curly hair is gorgeous. It's just gorgeous. And I just love it. And the book is really, really nice. My goodness. You see, this is what, here, she's a hairdresser. She writes a book. I'm sure she was dreaming of writing a book for years and years. And what did she do? She wrote a book. And you can write a book too. All you have to do is stop dreaming and start writing and be a difference maker. Now, she's a difference maker. She's going to make a difference in a lot of people's lives. They're going to read this book and they're going to say, oh, I didn't know this was a problem. And I mean, I hope you're not one of the people who tease somebody about curly hair, because if you did, you're, well, I'm not going to say what you are to me. But, you know, really, just, it's jealousy, I think. Maybe that's why straight-haired people like me, who desperately try to curl my hair, are jealous. But still, if I'm jealous, I'm not going to say something nasty to somebody. So get over it, people. Get over all of this. What? Oh, my gosh. It's 2020. We have enough problems in this world between people being miserable about curly hair, people being miserable about the color of your skin, people being miserable about if you're too short or too fat or too tall or too... Get over it. We have one right now. It's a law. As far as we know, we have one planet, one little planet that we're living on, and we have to live here. So make a difference. Make a positive difference. Stop with all of this nonsense. We really have to look at ourselves and say, if people can tease people about curly hair, there's something wrong with us. We really, really have to sort of recalibrate our brains or something, because I can't imagine it. The book actually, I get so many books. I get hundreds. I get at least now 10 to 15 books a week here at the studio, at home. They're piling up all over the place, and I'm going through them, picking the ones. Whatever. Anyway, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or, if you're very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So start writing today, and one day you can be a guest on Joy on Paper. And meanwhile, make a difference. Be a difference maker. Say something nice to somebody today. And I will start with Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. I really enjoy this this wonderful perfume that you're spraying in here. Okay, everybody, be well and read a book today or write one. Bye-bye now.